It is Friday, September 23rd, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today we are continuing our month of digital photography with a hardworking professional photographer who will share his thoughts on digital photography from the trenches, as it were.
Geek Speaks podcast and website are brought to you by GNI, a full-featured web hosting facility that provides co-location services and high-bandwidth connectivity. More information about GNI is available at www.gnihosting.com.
And of course, it is time now, as it is every Friday at 10, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, on Geek Speak, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with David Moyer about his experience in moving into and using digital photography. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, go to Geek Speak, click on Contact Us, and we'll get an email for that. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell, Miles Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control, and Drew Meyer, Storage Specialist at AdaptTech. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning, Lyle.
Morning, Lyle.
Before we get into our discussion with David about digital photography, you know, Miles, you must be on mic 5. Hey, Miles,
yes,
you there?
Hey, yes, I am.
Good
on
to
mic
see
five.
You, man. I don't know who's on mic 4, but we'll just take that out.
Who's on 4?
So before we get into our discussion about digital photography, as we've been doing all month, let's do some geek news. And, Sean, I'll start with you.
Sure. So Toshiba has upped the ante, or so the news is claiming, about its announcement of dual-layer HD DVD-R.
Okay, so
this is in that battle with Toshiba and somebody else.
This is
Sony.
Beyond the next generation.
I'm sorry, Sean, could you take us through that alphabet soup?
Yeah, what the heck did you just say?
Okay, so Toshiba is an electronics company out of Japan. Oh, you mean about the DVD.
Where's Japan?
No. So DVD-R is DVD recordable technology. The next generation is high definition.
So this is where you can record DVDs at home?
Yeah, well, you could do that now. But right. This is the next generation that has higher capacity. So we're talking beyond that.
Bigger.
We're talking about dual layer.
Okay.
Where you can actually record multiple layers on a disc.
Why would I? What difference does that make to me if I have multiple layers?
Well, instead of holding 15 gigs, it holds 30 gigs.
Ah, thank 30 you.
Gigs on. Okay, that's a good size. Right, so now, the current home units, 4.7 gigs is the max size.
Yeah. Oh, there is a dual layer.
Right. Which you and I both have burners for, and never been able to do it.
Yeah, you know, the last time I went to Fry's looking for media, I couldn't find any.
Uh-huh. It doesn't exist.
They have it now, and here it's expensive.
We have Betamax drives. Okay,
and,
go
you
on.
Know, I can't see spending more than a dollar for a piece of media. That's expensive to me. So, HD, dual layer HD DVD-R was adopted by the DVD forum, which is kind of interesting because Philips, who invented DVD or dual layer technology, is on the Blu-ray camp, which is the competing standard. And they're using two layers of reflective dye separated by a non-reflecting spacing material to do this. And there's talk that they can actually do a triple layer 45 gigabyte disc.
So are we going to see this whole battle going to be sidestepped by the massively increased density?
It's going to be interesting to see. Supposedly, the PlayStation 3 is going to support Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. Well,
because Sony's on that side. So I think it really depends on who gets their hardware out there first to see where it goes.
We'll probably see something like we did with Plus and Dash, where the drives start doing both anyway.
You know, there was talk of that, and they were working towards that.
Yeah, they walked away.
They walked away. It's not going to happen. So the Blu-ray Association says that their dual-layer recordable specification can hold 50 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
But it will require manufacturers to invest in entirely new equipment.
Ouch.
We'll see.
All right, thanks for that. Well, 45 gigs, exciting to me, because my photo collection's under that, so I could get my entire photo collection on one DVD. That would be nice.
That way only have one disc to lose.
Exactly. And,
well,
and
I'm guessing just a finger smudge would probably ruin that disc.
Yeah, and of course, the disc, you know, I won't be able to find a player for it in 4 years. Forget it. You know, it's over. So I don't think so. All right, thanks for that information on how bad companies do with launching new technology. We'll go with you, Drew.
So speaking of new technology, here's some old technology. Ask Jeeves, the butler character on a search engine website. The company has decided to axe Jeeves. They're no longer
going to... Yay, fire the digital guy.
Yeah, he got canned. Apparently his valet work wasn't up to snuff. So citing user confusion over what the butler character represents, the search site has said that Jeeves will soon be phased out. There's no firm date. No decision has been made about a new name for the site, but they're just getting rid of him. Apparently, he's no longer relevant. I don't know if
no
the market tells
him just
or...
ask.
Yeah, I like right. that. Ask dot dot dot.
Yeah. I don't know.
Is it still AskJeeves.com?
Well, he's named after the extraordinarily knowledgeable and helpful valet character from the comic novelist P.G. Wodehouse. But that's the roots of the name, but it has nothing to do with the actual site name.
It's funny. That started just down the street from me in Berkeley.
Yeah?
Yeah, I used to drive by it all the time.
Ask Jeeves?
Ask Jeeves.
Did you ask yourself why they were there?
At first, I thought it was really silly. And
did they have his logo up on the building?
They did, yeah.
There you go.
It wasn't a building. It was more like a house. It was really, this was back at before the bubble burst.
It's kind of funny. I was actually just thinking that the name ask.com would be kind of interesting.
Except that you could, the words dot,
yeah,
dot, dot.
Yeah, ask dot, dot, dot.
Register now. Oh, my gosh.
Squat, squat. Radio. Wait,
thanks, Drew. Do you have more on that story? Or you
it's just funny, the detail of the work they go to. Jeeves got a makeover last year in which he got slimmer and more tanned, and apparently trying to improve the usability somehow. I don't know. But whatever.
That's great.
It wasn't enough to
keep him
around.
Became a European butler.
So they probably asked him, you know,
they must have done some
we're thinking
research.
Of firing you, and he said, make me thinner.
Yeah.
Right. Americans just couldn't relate.
No. Okay. Let's go on to Miles.
Hurricane scams have been all the rage since Hurricane Katrina hit the
scams.
South.
Scams are all the rage?
Yeah, because they're going crazy. Like, you have a whole bunch of scams. You know, you have folks that are trying to donate to the Red Cross, or folks that are trying to donate to funds or particular organizations, or hearing a particular story from someone that has lost their home. But as always, human nature takes its toll, and you have people sending email out saying, you know, either some sob story or pretending to be a charity organization. Uh-huh. So a wanted user.
So they take your money and disappear.
Right.
And it never goes to the victims or the society or whoever.
Right. And I wanted to bring it up because we have Hurricane Rita coming up for Texas. And so people to be aware of it, to check the sources of the emails that you're receiving.
You know, we haven't done this mantra in a while. I think it's been like 6 months or so. Don't believe email is the basis of it. But it goes further. Really, don't believe email.
Yeah, and in addition to that, major network outages are expected with Rita.
Uh-huh.
Houston being a major hub for data centers, yes. So something like 1 million sites could go down as a result of the hurricane.
Wow.
Hmm. So we'll see how fast things are down. It did happen with New Orleans, too. There's hosting New Orleans, of course, as well.
Right.
Every major city has it. So basically, websites are unavailable until they get their services back up and running.
Right. Or at least some will be, yeah.
Yeah.
If they don't have any type of geographical redundancy.
If power goes out and network goes out in that area.
Hmm.
Assuming. Thank you, Miles, for that update. Sean, you got another one for us?
Yeah. So you heard that PalmSource was sold recently. I don't have a lot of information about that. But the big news is that Palm, the manufacturer of Palm, because it used to be Palm and PalmSource is the software, Palm has announced that its next generation of PDAs is going to run Windows Mobile 5.
What?
What? Wow, that is weird.
And from what the news story says, after having failed to buy back its former software division, PalmSource.
What?
Yeah. So I'd heard that PalmSource was sold.
To a Japanese company.
Yeah.
Right? Just recently, like a couple weeks ago.
That is really strange.
Very strange.
So what we're talking about is Palm, the handheld device, which has been the premier leader, if you will, in really good syncing from your handheld to your
Good portable apps.
They have the largest market share, don't they?
Right. So Microsoft has launched, had Windows CE, and now they have Windows CE Mobile Edition, or Media Edition, I guess.
So yeah.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about is that the company that launched Palm Source, basically, I mean, in some ways.
Yeah, Palm used to be one company, and then they took their software division and spun it off into its own company. I think because they didn't want to compete with
right,
because
they were
with hardware manufacturers
to other hardware.
Because other hardware manufacturers were making Palm devices, and here Palm is making the software and the hardware and competing with their partners.
Mm-hmm.
So they did that, and earlier this year, Palm sold or bought back trademarks from the software arm, and then that's Palm Source, the software arm, put itself up for sale.
Wasn't Palm Source going toward Linux too? So it's
they did actually
make an announcement about that.
So this is really telling. A while ago, our own geek Chris Dunphy, who's on all the time, worked for Palm Source for quite a while. His whole arm of Palm Source, a whole bunch of people were laid off.
Yeah.
And that, of course, was in retrospect, it was in preparation for selling.
He's in Costa Rica, so I was reading his blog.
Yeah.
And he said he was pretty stunned by news of Katrina and Palm Source.
Yeah.
So I guess what happened is U.S. and European handset makers bidded the price up too high.
Yeah.
Out of range of Palm. So Palm couldn't buy back Palm Source.
True.
So I guess now
that's
they're going to go with Windows.
Though. But now they're going to be selling essentially the same thing as everybody else, HP, Sony.
And their hardware is not that
basic
good.
Hardware with a Windows operating system.
It's a software that's great.
Yeah.
It's so simplistic. You're not tied to, you know, Windows Outlook.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much for that kind of stunning news. I appreciate it. I'm going to skip over to Drew, and we're going to get one more from Drew, one more for Miles.
All right. Got a quickie here. Opera is giving away their ad-free browser. Opera is a browser manufacturer. I think they're Swedish or Scandinavian. You guys know? I don't know. They're somewhere from Europe. But they used to have some adware that was permanently embedded in the software. You could buy a license in the free one, right? And now they're just getting rid of that because they weren't making enough money. It was only about 3% of their revenues from people who are actually purchasing the license to get rid of the adware. So might as well just give
them the free one.
Yeah,
right.
Quality.
So where
product.
Are they getting their money from?
They get their money from the rest of their business, which about half of it is set-top boxes and mobile devices where they embed their software in, and it's
kind
not branded as Opera.
Thing.
Yeah, it's just a tool that's part of the machine.
Okay.
And they also sell support on the software once you buy it if you want to buy a support upgrade.
All right. Thank you for that update on Opera. And I think that recommending Opera at this point makes sense. Try to take a look at it. It's free. You can download it and
especially
don't let it take
this,
over your defaults. But
this new ad-free version, and it's Opera is a serious competitor with Internet Explorer and Firefox. It's not as large as either one of those, but it's definitely a choice that you should consider.
Thank you for that. And it's very standards compliant as well, which is kind of like Firefox. Miles, you're the last news story for the day. What you got?
A new study is finding that blogs that deal with personal matters are much more likely than a blog having to do with politics or current events.
Imagine that. People like to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
But what I found surprising in this was that nearly 50% of bloggers see the activity as a form of therapy.
Fascinating.
Shouting to the universe.
Yeah, this talking about this is my problems, just getting it out.
The
world is your audience, that confidant.
The first time, you know, Miles, the first time I was blogging was for while my father was getting sick and passing away, and it was definitely a therapeutic thing. It was like a public mourning. So I see that. I don't do that now. Now I write tech articles, but I don't know if that's therapeutic.
Done with your sessions now.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, Miles, thank you for that information.
Yeah, I guess I'm just weird. I write about current events and politics.
you're only a small percentage of society is like you, Miles.
Apparently.
You're unique. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxel. That was Miles Elam, Drew Meyer, and Sean Cleveland. They're staying with us in the air room. Also in the air room is our guest, David Moyer. David Moyer was the team photographer for the Yankees for 5 years and photographer for the New York Times as a stringer, first line stringer. And he currently works as a photographer for TV series and pilots and feature films. And David, thank you much for joining us.
It's a pleasure being here.
So, David, you traditionally were doing film. Of course.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
The Yankee shots you sent me were all obviously film shots. And you were talking beforehand that the white balancing in the stadium is really hard for film.
Well traditionally, when we were shooting film in stadiums with those lights that they were using, nothing really balanced. If you shot daylight film, it wouldn't balance. And if you shot tungsten film, it wouldn't balance. And if you tried to correct it while you were shooting, you'd put a filter on and lose two stops, so you'd be out of luck right there.
So traditional white balancing for film is adding filters or selecting the type of film.
Correct.
So you didn't do that when you had you managed to get good shots. You went in black white?
A lot of black and white, but also at the lab. You know, they'd correct it when going to like scanning for four color process. They corrected it during that stage.
But you weren't in control of that
at
all?
Not at all. Nothing.
So you sent a shot that was like a good shot of a team player, and luckily you were doing the Yankees. So they knew that that was a white uniform.
Right.
You always correct
for the skin tone.
Oh, skin tone. Okay.
Yeah, usually.
That's most important, right?
Well,
with the faces and such.
Exactly.
Well, the shots you gave me were great. They're kind of low resolution. I haven't put them up yet, but I will put them up.
They were actually all black and white. I think majority of those were black and white that I shot back in the late 70s and early 80s. But when with black and white, it really wasn't a problem with white balance.
And you also mentioned that you had to have the dark room on in the
field. Each arena or stadium had actual physical dark room right there. So after the game or during the game, you'd have to go into the dark room, process your film, dry it, make a print, and then put it on a scanner, and send it to the newspaper. Now,
what was that scanner? Like a fax scanner? I mean,
it was a drum. I forget actually what you call it right now. It was a drum. You'd wrap the print around, and then it would spin around, and it would go. They'd receive it at the New York Times or AP.
Yeah, phone call.
Correct.
Wow.
But now, what the guys do, they find like a Starbucks or wherever close to the stadium or in the stadium, everything's Wi-Fi now, and just go onto the laptop and send it on.
And he maybe edit a little bit to get that white balance correct.
Absolutely.
So is white balancing easier in a stadium now?
Well,
digital photography?
Yeah, because you bring it into Photoshop and hit the button and
auto.
There you go.
One of the things that intrigued me when you contacted me saying, I've been hearing your show and I'm a photographer in the area and I'd love to come in, is you don't like the idea of using RAW. In your business, it would be a nightmare to use RAW.
Well,
you use JPEG.
Well, it's interesting.
It's not that I don't like it. I mean, in the perfect world, I'd shoot everything RAW. But when I'm working like what I do now, like 12 hours, 14 hours on a set, and I'm shooting hundreds, minimum of 200 to 300 images a day, I just, where am I going to have the time to, if I'm shooting RAW, to process all that information, number one. Two, the final product, end product of what I'm shooting is going to be a newspaper, magazine, something that's not going to be blown up more than maybe 5 by 7 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So on a high-end digital camera now, I can shoot fine JPEG, and they're about 3 to 4 megabyte files,
right?
Which is a pretty good-sized file. Of course, it still is a compressed image. But I attribute, I compare like JPEG to shooting slide film in the old days. You better nail your exposure. There's not a lot of room for error there. Where RAW, you can be off a stop here, stop there, and you can take care of it, you know.
But with a digital camera, you've got a preview of what you just took. You kind of know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to be said for that, I have to tell you. You know, you're there and it's like either if you're outside in the blazing sunlight or like you're inside. Sometimes it's really hard to see. You're in the ballpark.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's an instant gratification.
Now, okay, so on set now, what you're doing now, doing feature films and series, they're always lighting and cameras rolling.
Right.
You're taking shots of the actors doing their scene, or sometimes actors off set?
Well, a little of both. For the most part, I shoot while they're rolling the cameras. And my camera actually goes into a thing called a sound blimp. It's a black box. It goes with like foam, has tubes, and you fire it electronically from the outside. So these high end digital cameras still have mirrors, so that you still hear that sound. So I have to have something to, you know, quiet that.
Yeah. So you've got this big box. Does that make it hard to preview them?
You have to open up the box after, you know, because they shoot. You know, 3 or 4 or 5 different times each scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, if you don't get it the first time, hopefully there's...
Do it again and again and again.
Yeah, exactly.
So well, how's the lighting on set?
Well, normally it's always great because the director of photography and the gaffer are lighting the shot for you.
Right, they're specifically set up to light it. So but you're not where the camera is.
I'm right next to the camera. And this last film I just finished in San Francisco, they were shooting at 24p, which is this new, you guys probably know more about it than I do. It's a new high-end digital, you know, camera.
I hadn't heard 24p.
Yeah, that's
Sean, 24p for digital camera?
That's the
new.
Is that
video?
Yeah, it's video.
Nice.
It's the brand new.
So that's 24 frames per second.
Right, yeah, 24p.
I'm not sure what the P actually stands for, but I can tell you one thing. The resolution on it is just, and on the end, they're going to transfer this video to film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough because they can, for me, because they're shooting a really low light, because that camera can pick up all that stuff. Fortunately, I'm shooting digital now, so in these low lighting situations, shooting digital stills, it's perfect for that.
Why are they shooting low light in that environment?
Well, it depends on this. You know, this movie that I just finished is about the lynchings in Milpitas.
Oh, so it's all nighttime.
A lot was night, interior, all this moody stuff. So, you know, consequently, that's just the way it is.
Now, you actually brought in a Xerox from, I don't know what paper this is.
The Chronicle.
Yeah. And it's talking about the 1933 lynching and the movie being made. And when you opened up the second shot, which is actually a shot of the lynching.
Correct.
You thought it was yours.
Yeah, I mean, I had sent over a few photos to the Chronicle when I opened it up in the newspaper. I said, well, this is my photo. But then I looked closer, the copyright is 1933. I'm like,
not yours.
Not me.
It's real.
Wow.
So you had your set just like that photo is what you're saying?
Incredibly so. I mean, that's exactly, and then even the one of them storming, this is an actual photo of them storming the courthouse in Santa Clara.
Wow.
This is, I mean, it looks so much like it's really.
Do you know what's the story?
What's the story? Is there a documentary that just came out?
Well, no. This is a true story about this lynching. About this, these two guys that were a young man was kidnapped, and these two guys were scapegoats. These 10,000 people stormed the courthouse, dragged them out, and lynched them.
And killed him.
Jeez. Killed him, yeah.
And they were innocent.
They were innocent. And then Roosevelt comes out, and, you know, it's a big, huge, I never even heard of it.
Yeah.
So the name of the film is Valley in the Heart's Delight?
Right now, yeah, that's what it's been called.
And that's, of course, working title, so it can always change.
Yeah.
And the article in the Chronicle, do you know what day it's in?
I do not. It was, I think it was last Thursday.
Last Thursday's Chronicle. Yeah. The title of it is King Mob Was in the Saddle.
Yeah.
And he was an inexorable ruler.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, by Roy Breyer. Thank you very much. yeah. So you listen to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In a few moments, I'll welcome you to join our conversation, and I'll give out those numbers in just a few minutes. But I want to get a couple more questions in with you, David. In these low light situations with JPEGs, you were saying that you recently worked on a TV series that sounds kind of, or no, it was a film that sounds pretty interesting, and you've got like over 6,000 photos of this.
Is the one I just finished.
This one.
Yeah, I'm shooting like anywhere between 200 and 500 shots a day.
Do you look at those photos yourself afterwards?
You know, I just, you know, at this point in my career, I just, you know, I know what I've got, and I just, what I do at the end of the day, because as you guys all know, it's not if your hard drive's going to crash, it's when.
Right.
So everything is immediately backed up on DVD. I get it off the desktop as quickly as I can every day.
Have you lost the DVD yet? Like,
No, I haven't. And what I do is I take the DVD and then send it to the lab, a photo lab, traditional photo lab. They make contact sheets. Or if it's a higher budget film, I will shoot raw and burn it on DVD, send it to the lab, and then they do all the processing of the images.
And then to give you a copy back of processed versions,
yes,
so you have those?
Absolutely.
And is that lab working for you or working for the motion picture?
For the studio. Uh-huh. I picked the lab, but you know, they're actually
employed by them.
Correct.
And these are photographic pictures.
Correct.
Yeah. You're on a movie set, you're taking still pictures?
Yes.
What are they used for?
For selling the film, DVD boxes, posters, publicity. Open up like the Chronicle on Friday, you see all this ads.
The ads, yeah.
And all that,
okay,
stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And any books or
magazines,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, that are
and the books that come out later.
Absolutely.
Now, do you get copyright on all those things? Does the film own it? And you
they
just
own
kind of,
it, and I'm actually in the local 600, which is the Camera Guild, which includes all the directors of photography, cameras assistants, mm-hmm. and still photographers. So I'm their slave, basically.
Yeah, and you're working 14-hour days, which is union time. And
yeah,
it sounds
exactly.
Like a film union.
Even with W, we still have overtime. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So when we get back from the break, we got to talk about how do you keep track of all this stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
I'm Ira Glass, the host of This American Life. Our program is different than other shows on the radio. The kinds of stories we do are different, like little movies for radio, with characters in some situation, and funny moments, and more emotional moments, and unexpected plot twists. We spend a lot of time looking for stories and ideas you won't hear anywhere else. If you haven't heard us, I hope you'll listen this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. right after Car Talk on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the Internet. Go to geekspeak.org to ask us questions.
KUSP is co-sponsoring the 17th Monterey County Artist Studio Tour. This is a countrywide event that allows the public rare access to both well-known and emerging artist studios and their work. This year's self-guided tour will be open to 96 of the area's artists, and this is a unique opportunity to experience firsthand the processes, techniques, and vast approaches to a wide range of mediums in art. Tour runs Saturday and Sunday, September 24th and 25th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., with an encore weekend on October 1st and 2nd. For more information, please go online to MontereyStudioTour.com.
The Board of Directors of KUSP and the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation meets monthly, and the public is invited to attend. This month, the meeting is on Monday evening, September 26th, beginning at 6 p.m. at the KUSP Studios, 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Call the station during business hours for more information. Our numbers are 476-2800 or 800-655-5877.
And you can call those numbers right now to ask us questions about digital photography, to ask our guest David Moyer about, I don't know, being around the Yankees, what the heck.
Sure.
And, of course, about technical questions and dilemmas you may be having with your computer or other things of electricity nature. Miles?
Community Alliance with Family Farmers provided support for this program, buying fresh and local produce from farmers markets, CSAs, retailers, and restaurants. Supports the local economy. Buy fresh, buy local campaign at 761-8507 or online at caff.org.
This program is also supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. That does remind me, I know what Cruise.io's DSL 6.0 is. It's very fast DSL. So they have multiple stages of DSL now support. So they got this top-notch DSL, which costs a bit more, but is really fast and fun.
Does it reach up to Boulder Creek?
I don't know if it reaches the Brookdale.
Well, if Cruise.io is listening, please let the geeks know.
It's supported in Felton.
I wonder if they have a map of coverage on their website.
Nice. Well, you just moved into a nice, fat bandwidth area.
That's right.
That must be nice.
It is. I've got an option.
Some people go by school district. We go by bandwidth.
You can join the geeks right now with questions and comments. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or go to the internet, go to geekspeak.org, and click on Contact Us. The geeks today, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. We are speaking with David Moyer, former staff photographer of the Yankees and photographer of the New York Times. And now you'll see his pictures, though you know, won't know, all over video boxes everywhere and commercials for.
Although, Lyle, if you do wait till the end of the movie and you check out the credits, I am listed.
You are there. Yeah. Yes. Cool. Good, good.
Yeah, it says either unit stills or still photographer.
Yeah,
so.
It does make sense. The motion the industry keeps a hold of those photos. They're theirs.
Yeah.
I mean, they know about copyright. You know, the entire film is theirs. They're,
absolutely.
They have to give you credit, but
that's it.
It's telling.
And the funny thing, when you're at a movie theater, the only people sitting around at the end of movie theaters are usually people that have worked on them. So trust
I'm
me,
one of
I know.
Those. Yeah, totally. And you do sit at the end and go, yes,
that's
I made
me.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't stop.
Or either that or you run out the door quick.
Right. Speaking of run out the door quick, the review in the, I believe, the Chronicle as well of a film, of a series you just worked on, a pilot series. Horrible. Do you take that offensively?
Or? Well, you know, I didn't write it, I didn't direct it, so I'm just a very small cog in the wheels. Uh-huh. So do the same job for $1 million film or $25 million film, but it's no, I don't. Not at all.
Because that review is probably the worst review I've ever heard.
I'm one of the worst I've read of you. But if you want to watch the show, it's on tonight at 9 o'clock on Fox.
Okay. Well, tell us which one it is.
It was called
The Gate when you worked on it, right?
Originally, it was called Deviant Behavior.
Uh-huh.
And then they changed it to The Gate. You know they're in trouble when they're changing the name of the film three or four times.
And they changed it again, huh?
Yeah, and they changed it to, it is now called Killer Instinct.
Ooh, and it got a big old thumbs down, huh?
Now, unfortunately, your stills are never used on television because it must use the
only time that you'd see any of my stills on TV would be or on the screen would be if they were used as props on the set. If there's a photo of somebody that's on a desk or something like that, or
maybe a newsreel,
right?
Like us, you know, your news person's talking and it's on the screen behind them.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
All right, we got a question. So, well, let's go ahead and go to calls. It's going to take me a second to punch her up. But from Aptos, we have Ellen. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Ellen? Let's see. Hang on a second.
Actually, we have an email from Kevin in Santa Cruz. Wanted to let us know about 24p.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay, go ahead and do 24p.
The 24p is 24 frames per second presented progressively. So that's what movie theaters have been showing That's what film has always been, 24p. The problem is digital went 30p because, you know, it could. And now they're trying to bring both together into a standard, so video is cranking down from 30 to 24.
And emulate film.
The 24p is motion picture film moving forward.
Great. Thank you
very
much.
You mean that's how fast the frames run in front of the camera?
Which is 24 frames per second.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Now, you and each of those frames is drawn individually one at a time.
Right. Now, of course, David, you don't shoot that fast.
No, that's not
you
what I do.
You just do 300 a day.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a lot slower. Eileen from Aptos, welcome to Geek
Speak. Good.
Hi there.
Hi.
We were having a conversation last night, a friend and I, and we're confused on how the megapixels in a digital camera work. In other
Us
words,
too.
Man.
Did you figure it out?
If you have a, let's say I just bought a Nikon and it's a 6, you know, megapixel Nikon. If I don't use the largest setting, am I not using all the megapixels?
That's right. You're not using all the megapixels. Well, not really.
We don't have any idea. This is just confusing to us.
Oh, that helps.
And I'm a still photographer, and I say megapixel, mega schmitzel.
It's really about the lens,
words,
right?
Is there any reason to use the full largest setting if
Absolutely.
You're really only going to print 4x6s for the most part?
Good question.
Great question.
Okay, man.
What does reality
have
to do with this, right?
Okay, first off, the camera is going to use its entire sensor and downsample, unless it's in a zoom mode.
Wait, downsample?
Yeah, meaning that if you have 6 megapixels and you want to get a photo that's only 3 megapixels, it's going to take a 6 megapixel picture, it's going to look at the whole thing, and it's going to shrink it, if you will.
I mean, if I had it set...
The camera does it itself.
Okay.
Unless you're using a digital zoom on the camera. And the digital zoom is just saying, you know, ignore everything outside of this area, use the inner side, and it's actually expand it up to the size of the full megapixel. So you're creating fake data. To zoom in. Never use digital zoom. Digital zoom's just meh. You can do that in Photoshop better. So in any case, you're gonna be shooting something and you wanna print it in 4x6 and you got a 6 megapixel which can shoot, you can print it 12x18 and look okay. It depends on the camera and how they decide to do it. But my personal take, shoot as big as possible and deal with getting it smaller later.
Is there any reason not to do that? I mean, why not?
Well,
her question is, should I max it out?
Say what I just did was I went on a 3-week trip, and I wanted to have enough ability to keep taking pictures. So I downsized to a smaller setting, and it's still pretty large.
Yeah.
And the quality looks great. Is that sort of a reasonable way to go?
Totally.
Unless you want to blow something up that you think is really precious, then you dial up the largest numbers in your camera.
I agree. Yes, that's totally true. I would say that downsampling to get more data in there, that's basically what David's doing because of the RAW and JPEG thing. You know, David's shooting so many shots that he just goes to JPEG in the camera. He could get a better picture going to RAW.
But in my camera, I think there's 4 different JPEG settings going from fine all the way down to whatever the low setting is.
Right.
The high being, I think, between... Oh, I think 4.5 megabytes. I don't even know what the low is.
Right.
But to answer, maybe to talk to about what she's talking about,
Eileen, yeah.
The emailing, if you're going to be emailing those photos, you want to have them as small as possible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you can't even see them on the screen. You're scrolling all over the place.
Right. So the only risk you have is that you take your shot at the lower setting and then later realize that's a shot I want to blow up. Because then you're
up
the creek without a paddle.
But would you say the old 640 by 3 something, that's okay for a 5x7?
No, that's okay for a 2x1 by 1x6.
Sean's got the metric in front of him.
Oh, I've got the chart in front of me. Okay, so you understand, if you take a camera that captures 1600 by 1200 pixels, that's a resolution of 1.92 million pixels when you do the math.
Okay.
And then that's referred to as 2 megapixel.
And
it's marketing rounds it up, of course.
A lot.
Would that make a good 4x6? No? Yes? No?
Okay, so if you want a 4x6, you need an image size of 1280 by 960.
Do you have a URL for us, Sean?
to keep it as pristine and perfect as possible.
That's not an easy URL. But you know
what?
I'll
frantically writing down in pencil.
We'll link to it on the website
today.
It'll
be up on our website.
But they've got a really nice common image sizes and print sizes at 300 DPI, which is your standard, your printer.
So you want to do 300 DPI.
And there's math that you do. You take your dots per inch, divide it by 300 pixels per inch, and then you get... the size of the image.
David, you want to share some comments?
Yeah, just which sort of brings me to another topic about when the old days shooting film and you had an assistant that you worked with, this guy, you had to make sure that you knew how to load the film into the holders or the, you know, process the film. Now, from my standpoint, I bring a person on who's very, very computer savvy, so he knows how to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Download and, like, burn and do all that stuff. And even and more so in a studio situation where all the cameras now are have wireless transmission right to, like, a viewing area. So mm-hmm. where you have an art director who is immediately looking at your photos that are being shot, which is good and bad. It's a double-edged sword right there. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are with the, you know, the $30,000 Hasselblads.
At some point, you're going to just point your viewfinder,
right,
and that'll be you know, sent wirelessly, and the guy will say, take the picture now, and you just become a tool.
Exactly.
You become a button masher.
What do you take the picture now? He just has a button for your camera on his keyboard.
You become a human accessory.
Exactly.
So I think a cheaper solution for you, rather than getting a digital assistant that goes with you on everywhere you go, is to get a lot larger storage cards. They're not that expensive, and you can store a lot more. Of course, then you've got a backup problem.
I remember when I first got my Nikons, this is like just 3 years ago, my D1Xs, the 512 cards, megabyte cards, were $500.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 512 cards are like $29.
Right.
I mean, memory's just come down in all aspects of our daily life here.
Smart card, so 1 gigabyte smart card is $80 at Fry's.
Right, exactly.
Eileen, I like to take the highest quality shot all the time. That's why I'm shooting in RAW all the time. But
it's very quick then between your shots. I just bought a D50, a Nikon D50.
Now, what's the megapixel resolution of that?
6.1.
So at 6.3, you could shoot 10 by 6 pictures at your highest res.
Huh.
At 300 pounds.
When does it equal film, the quality of film?
It never equals film. They're different mediums.
Okay.
Is that a good solution? Good answer. What I was going to say, though, is I went ahead and recently I was on a trip and I was playing with kids and we wanted to take a lot of shots really fast and do kind of like kind of stop motion animation kind of with film.
Right.
And so I switched over to JPEG. I think I did the highest setting on JPEG and took a whole bunch of the shots that way because I knew that they were just for play. But the same kind of thing, if you accept that you know your print size max is going to be 4x6 and you could step down your JPEG a little bit, you know, try printing it. If you like the quality, then that's all that matters, right?
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
You bet.
All right, we're going to go to Big Sur. I love getting calls from Big Sur. Richard, welcome.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a question about email software programs. I've been using Netscape for a pretty long time, and I'm getting motivated to see what else might be available. I've been having trouble lately with, for instance, when I attach files, at first I thought my attachments in general weren't going out. And now after playing around with it, what I figured out is it's just Word documents for some reason that when I send them, they don't show up on the other end. But if I send some other type of document that's not a Word document, it goes through. I have no idea why.
Does the receiver get a thing called a MIME attachment?
You mean the person receiving the email?
Yeah.
No, it just looks like I never sent the attachment.
Okay. Here's one possibility that's the simpler one. Are you on a Windows machine?
Yes.
Okay, it wouldn't actually matter. It's possible you actually have a Word macro virus. It's called a Word macro virus. Those can be detected by spam detection software, and some spam detection software on servers will remove
virus
attachments.
Virus detection
software?
Sorry,
virus protection software.
Have you run an antivirus scan, is our question.
Yeah, I've done that, and what I also found, maybe this helps, on Earthlink, if I send an email from one of my email accounts to another one of my email accounts, on the web server, the email shows that it has an attachment with 0 bytes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Something's stripping this out for you.
Yeah.
I don't think it's your email client.
I think it's your server.
So did you, let me ask the question again, have you run an antivirus scan recently on your machine that you're sending from?
Yeah, pretty recently. I've done it. It seems to me I've done it since the problem started.
Yeah, and were there any results that mattered?
And it didn't find anything.
And how old is your antivirus program?
Well, it's Norton 2005, and I, you know, update it, you know, almost every day.
So and that's the only one that you have, right?
Yeah.
You might try going to one of the free online scanners, like I think McAfee has one, where it doesn't cost you anything to go do it. You just log onto their site, and it'll scan your machine remotely, and it gives you a different set of viruses to compare, of virus signatures to compare against, so that if Norton misses it, then McAfee might catch it.
Richard, we're going to go on to other calls and questions. I hope we helped you to some degree. One choice for you at this point is to download the newest version, if you will, of Netscape email reader, which I would recommend going to the Mozilla site, mozilla.org, and getting Thunderbird. Thunderbird's a new client. It will import all your settings and all your email from your other email client, and that's a step that you can do right away. It's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but I think it's a better email reader.
Uh-huh. Netscape is no longer really developed or supported. It hasn't been for a couple of years. So.
Yeah, I noticed when they went to Netscape 8, it's only a browser and it doesn't have the email.
Right. So Thunderbird at Mozilla's site is what you want. Good luck on that, Richard.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. All right, we've got a question for David through email from San Miguel. Michael asks, how do you get into Local 600 Camera Guild?
I'm not sure how it's done now, but when I got was doing this about 15 years ago, you required 100 days of documented work as a still photographer on non-union shows. And 15 years ago, there was a lot of that going on in Los Angeles. Now it's not so much. So that's that and $6,000 and you're in.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, you got to be a serious photographer to stick with that, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a year?
No, that's your initial
lifetime membership.
And then there's a quarterly dues, and then when you're working, they take out a certain amount of your paycheck. But that also goes to pension, health care, and all that stuff.
Yeah. You like being in that union?
Yes, yes. Of course, they don't do anything for you as far as getting work, but...
Well, no. anyway. Thomas from Monterey, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello, well, my question is, I can't load Hotmail on either Safari or Internet Explorer, and this has been going on for about 12 hours, and I can't get any news about why that might be or when they expect it to be loadable.
Can you visit Hotmail at all?
Not really. I the closest I can get is like a sign-in page. If I just Google MSN Hotmail, I can type in my password, but then I get that same spinning thing and this eternal loading thing never connects.
Okay, can you connect to any websites, other websites?
Anything else.
Yeah. Okay, and right out of the box, do you have have you changed anything on your computer recently?
No.
Okay. Well, I would go with that Hotmail has some problems right now.
We don't have anybody available to check at the moment.
No, I certainly don't. So there's no way to get like an ETA on it or something.
Probably not. No. One of those free email services, it's difficult to get any kind of real human.
Right.
And of course, if you sent in an email to them, if you could.
I could, I guess, via another email account.
Right.
And I would hear from them in 3 or 4 days.
Right. Right. And it would be the first response would be a canned response telling you nothing.
Right.
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 And of course, Hotmail is using Microsoft's passport service, so it might not be Hotmail per se. It might be the passport service is having difficulties. If anyone out there knows of more details about what's going on with Hotmail, let us know, and Tom can hear it off air.
Okay, I'll stay tuned. Thank you very much,
Tom.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to go ahead and go to a photo question from Aptos. Scott, welcome to GeekSpeak. Scott, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello, yes.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, I have a question for your guest. I was wondering if he sets a custom white balance in a stadium or studio and how he goes about doing that, whether he shoots off a gray or white card or just pick something in the scene.
All right, David?
Generally, at least my experiences with the D1X and the D2X, the auto white balance is pretty much right on the money. For what I'm shooting now on feature films and TV shots, I actually haven't shot in a stadium or an arena. Occasionally, I will use a white card just to do the balance, but for the most part, I just use the auto white balance. And then if it's a little bit off, you're lazy, just bring it into Photoshop and
modify it.
Yeah.
But you never get too off where
it's never off that much where it's really that big an issue.
Yeah. What about lighting for like TV series? I mean, sometimes they're looking for a certain effect. Like they've got a nighttime scene, they've got a lot of blues in it.
Well, what generally what happens, which is why this whole digital thing is great, is that what they'll do is they'll light the actors with a tungsten light and they'll use like HMIs. They'll be mixing the lighting. Where when we were shooting film, it was a nightmare because you couldn't balance that. But with the digital, shooting digital now, it's a breeze just to balance it.
Scott, personally, I shoot with a Nikon D70, and my white balancing techniques are ignore the light that I'm in and switch over to that light setting. as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you can do that.
So I'm really fast at switching my camera's white balance, but it sure is a pain because sometimes I want to pick it up and just fire it a few times.
And sometimes I'm fast at switching it by accident as I see a bunch of blue pictures showing up on my preview screen.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
But if you were going to use a card in an artificially lit situation, you know, say the lights coming, the artificial lights coming in from the side. Can you just set your card up so it's facing the camera?
Well, that, absolutely. That's exactly what you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appreciate the info.
Sure. My pleasure.
Thanks for the call.
Sure thing.
We're going to go ahead and go to, let's see, George in Seaside. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Just a quick question, not directly related to your topic, but...
Sorry.
I started using Mozilla Firefox some time ago, largely thanks to recommendations I heard on your program, but I've been reading recently on ZDNet and other places that Firefox is subject to more vulnerabilities than had previously been
That's right.
And I wonder what your comments, and you can answer this offline.
That's right. We're talking about international domain names. Miles, you want to address that?
I am so glad you brought that topic up.
Thank you.
Because... that report I have serious misgivings about. It is correct that Firefox is not absolutely safe. And this is something to mention to all listeners. Any piece of complex software will never be 100% safe. It'll never happen.
But now you sound really defensive of Firefox. Let's say there recently was an exploit in Firefox, and actually most of the browsers that support international domain names was found. And right. that exploit is called a... what is it? What kind of exploit is it?
Well,
it basically allows you to insert code and run code as the browser.
And it is
common to all browsers that do this, right?
It's common to all software. Okay. I mean, in some degree, you can do this.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. This particular exploit is a serious exploit. If you're using Firefox, you'll see a red button near the top right-hand corner of the screen or of the Firefox window. And that will be to upgrade to the newest version of Firefox. I highly recommend pressing that.
Right. And if you have a really recent version of Firefox, it'll just be a small patch that happens.
No, if you go from Firefox 106 to 107, it's actually a...
Pretty big. Yeah. Well, highly recommended, of course, always update your software. Now, the thing that's made the news about this, that's so big about this news, is that this wonderful support for international domain names, we're talking about domain names that have characters that aren't in the standard American character set, if you will. So... all of a sudden being able to have extended characters is really complicated in domain names. So all these great browsers like Opera and Firefox, Mozilla Suite support that. Internet Explorer doesn't support that. The weakness, the hack that someone found was in that great support. So it's not in Internet Explorer, and that's why it's hitting the news.
Right. However, this company that was doing the review was saying that Firefox had more vulnerabilities than IE. That was the issue I wanted to address. Which was, there was what they were looking at. They were looking at the number of exploits, and yet they weren't looking at the severity of those exploits, when in fact the Internet Explorer exploits were by and large more severe, or a greater percentage of them were severe than the Firefox ones.
Right.
So, I mean, at this point I'm not going to say, yes, one is absolutely more secure than the other. I happen to think it's Firefox, but I'm not going to definitively
say right now using Firefox is safer for you because more virus exploits are out there that are populating exploits using Internet Explorer.
Right. What's safest is if everyone used, I mean, if you had a variety of different browsers out there. It's just like biology.
With Opera becoming
monoculture.
Becoming free. That's
there
actually a good thing.
And Robert from Aromos emails in saying that he downloaded Opera last night. Now, he was using Linux. And he encourages everyone to try it. It is noticeably faster than Firefox 1.06, which is interesting. And since Opera just dropped the whole adware thing, he says that even his unpreferred
his
dial-up access.
Poor dial-up, quote, poor.
Yeah, edited. His dial-up access works great for this browser. So, Opera, if you want to try something else at this point, go for it. Thanks for the call, and he already said goodbye to us. Miles, do you want to wrap something else with that? You want to finish your statement with us?
No, I'm good.
Life is so uncertain.
Thanks, yeah, that was a good closing statement. Yeah. Why can't you be more like Drew, Miles?
Oh, come on.
Bruce... in Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you.
What's the question?
Question is, I am here with my friend Ellen, who has just bought a new G5 iMac.
The big flat thing?
Yeah.
Is it a 17-inch or...?
No, 20.
20-inch.
It's
nice.
Remarkable.
Okay, so what's the problem?
The question, well, it's a tech question. She also has, her other computer is a first-generation iMac.
For, so the little candy drop. Box.
Yeah,
the
gun, yeah okay. She's got a little tangerine one here.
Oh, man.
Now, amazingly, this old iMac still works. Optical drive still works.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of unusual. But the issue is we would like to get everything from this one to the other one.
Hmm.
And I've attempted by... I was able to get everything onto a super disk, but the super disk is not recognized by her new iMac because it doesn't work with OS X.
Do you have broadband access in your house? Like
ESL? Yes, we do have broadband.
So you have a little network at home?
Well, we don't have it. Well, I suppose you could say that we've got a network. We've got she's got Cruise.io and she's got. High-speed connection.
Okay, is it one connection, though, just from the modem to the computer?
Or do you have a...
It's plugged into the wall.
Do you have a hub or a router?
We've got a router, and we've got a router modem here.
This is the way to do it, then. Oh, router modem, okay.
Tell us how many plugs that you see.
We have attempted to put, using an Ethernet cable from one computer to the other.
Ah, don't do that.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't work.
That's not going to happen.
You got to connect both into the router. You've got to use a special cable.
Do you have
into the router?
Actually, you don't have to use. If they're both newer Macs, you wouldn't have to use a special cable. But
right.
But you have a. You're saying you have a DSL box that connects to the phone line.
Yep.
From that one line goes to another box that you're calling the router.
Mm-hmm.
And that has multiple plugs in it.
Yes.
Plug both your computers into that with Ethernet cables.
Put both into that.
Both into that.
Okay. And so I think we're then going to have to get another. Ethernet cable. We just got one here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will do that.
That's
do that.
Like 30 cents.
Then once you do that, you want to go turn sharing on the iMac. The old iMac. You've got to share your files over the network.
Okay.
And I don't remember how to do that in OS 9, but it would be on the control panel.
I can do that.
The other option is it's easier to share on Windows on the new OS 10. So you would set up sharing on the new computer and from the old computer can open up the network. Drive
and just copy
that.
Your files over.
Right, and copy the files over. But have you been looking at the documentation on migration that comes with Apple products?
No.
Go into OS X and search migrate.
Migrate
in
is called.
Migrate in the help. And since you're using Tiger, just type migrate in the upper right-hand corner.
Okay.
And you're probably going to find the information on how to do this. It'll probably give you step-by-step instructions. Apple's pretty good about that.
Great.
Thank you very much for the call. We're going to have to go now.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good luck. Well, David, we didn't get to talk about as much photography as I was hoping. Next week we're going to have on iView Media Pro, which is a group that does software categorizing, digital asset management. That's the whole next week's show. But, David, I want to thank you for being on and giving an opportunity to mention anything else you might want to mention about what you do. You're done, huh?
Yeah.
You've been a wonderful resource. I'm going to contact you because I have your personal email about questions related to photography because it's such a great thing.
If you want to put a link on your
website. Yes, I would love to.
I have an email address you can put on there as a link.
I will do that.
And we'll contact you when we make Geek Speak the movie.
Yes, that's right. You need a staff photographer. Geek Speak is proudly sponsored by Business
Don't
with
Pleasure. Don't laugh.
Geek Speak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. Our guest today is David Moore. He is currently a photographer for multiple movies, and look for him in the end of the credits, and for TV series, especially pilots. And he used to be the team photographer for the Yankees and worked for the New York Times photographer. David, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Nice meeting you all, you guys.
The geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Drew Meyer. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And you'll be back next week, of course, right? Miles?
As far as I'm aware.
Yay!
Depends on the hurricanes, right?
Today you scared the bejesus out of me because you didn't come in the door until, after we'd started the show.
Like I said, I got stuck up in the mountains.
No, I was here before the show started.
Okay, yeah, a minute before the show started. The show will start again next week at 10 a.m. on Friday mornings. The geeks, you're welcome to be here before 10 a.m. if you'd like. The show next week is with iView Media Pro. We've got this expert, Sean, I can't remember his last name. He's going to be with us, talk about digital asset management. I'm hoping he'll talk a little bit about storage. We haven't done in this month of digital photography anything about storage. Next week's show is the final show.
Right.
But hopefully some geeks will emerge that know a lot about personal storage, and we'll be able to answer some of those questions next week. to answering the phones today was Michael Lewis. Thank you for listening to Geek Speak. To those of you who called in, thanks for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who really wants to listen to that? Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. All right. Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is The Open Road with Dean Monroe, and after that is, at 1 p.m., is Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang.
The
Rocket Ride to Nowhere. He used to be right after us on Mondays when we were on Mondays, and it was so great to see him every week. But now I get to hear his show, and that's even better. So all day Friday is wonderful music, and, of course, some NPR breaks, like we'll be doing in just 10 seconds. I look forward to hearing all your calls and questions through email, geekspeak.org, and, of course, next week at 10 a.m. on Geek Speak. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening.